This GX on Agriculture podcast is brought to you by Haas Nissan in Yorkton.
To the people tending the land and animals that feed us and support our community, we at Haas Nissan want to say thank you on behalf of all those who depend on you, the farmer. Like you, we're a family business with family values you can depend on. Haas Nissan, where a customer becomes family.
GX on Agriculture with Doug Falconer.
Good afternoon and welcome to GX on Agriculture. Coming up on today's program, we'll hear from the winner of the Saskatchewan Agriculture Scholarship recipient yesterday. That was Jesse Patzer from the Swift Current area. We will hear from him on today's show. The general manager of Manitoba Pork says legislation designed to protect landowners from trespassers will enhance the ability of livestock producers to guard their animals from the introduction of disease. We will hear from Cam Dahl on today's show. When it comes to seeding canola, one of the good ideas is to approach a flea beetle management properly. We'll hear from Larry Durand. He used to live here in Yorkton, but he lives out of Humboldt now, and we will hear from him coming up on today's show. All that and much, much more on today's edition of GX on Agriculture. But first, it's time for the Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather. And that's a presentation of Sean Prahitka, your REMAX Blue Chip Realty Ag Division Specialist.
Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather.
With Phil Spivak from Precision Weather. Phil, it's bright and sunny once again here in Yorkton, pretty much a carbon copy of yesterday.
Yeah, and it's nice to have the weather that you can enjoy, but there does come a point where we need some water, and there is not a lot of that in our forecast, certainly not in the next 5 days. We've got dry air. The dew point this afternoon will be riding around -5. That's where we're coming out of the morning with it. -5 to -6. It'll just pretty much hold there, not only through today, but for the next couple of days. Not a whole lot of variation in that. And that does allow us to drop off at night. It brings the temperature down. It gives it a chance, anyway, to drop down to near freezing. Now, the wind will pick up just a bit for later on tonight and tomorrow, and that may influence the low a bit, especially starting Sunday night. Not so much tomorrow night yet, even though the wind will be up a bit. We'll still see those temperatures for the next few nights dropping below freezing. Looking out longer term as well, there is not a lot of rainfall anticipated. We can run out, you know, accurately we can get a reasonable shot out to about a week, but we can look ahead and kind of see where things are headed for the next couple of weeks, and there's still, even out to the tail end of the month, not looking like there's much as far as rainfall. So we can expect not only the dry conditions, but a gradual increase in drought indices. Through the afternoon today, we're around 14. The wind does pick up a bit. It's been pretty light through the morning. It'll be in the 10 to 20 range through the day. Clear sky tonight down to -3, 15 to 25 kilometer per hour wind. Same tomorrow. That wind, steady and noticeable breeze. The high, again, around 14. Saying partly to mostly sunny, the cloud cover that mixes in is negligible. It's there. It occasionally gives you a nice blend in the sky, but it doesn't produce any showers. For Saturday night into Sunday, generally clear and mostly sunny on Sunday. Very little cloudiness at all by that point. -4 for Saturday night and 13 on Sunday. As I mentioned, we're likely going to remain above freezing from that point forward. Nighttime may get close, but likely staying just on this side of the 0-degree mark, and it's a little bit warmer into the week as well. Monday, 18. Tuesday, 21. We'll stay upper teens through the week, watching for maybe a disturbance, bringing a few showers toward the end of the week and the weekend, but that's a slight chance. It looks like more likely than not at this point, we'll be staying dry.
That's Phil Spivak from Precision Weather. Temperatures around the region this hour, the Paw is at 8 degrees. Swan River and Dauphin, 10. Brandon, 11. Show Lake Russell and Roblin, 9. Regina, 14. Saskatoon and Indian Head, 13. Hudson Bay, Broadview, Mooseman, 11. Wynyard, Wadena, Kelvington, 12. The Yorkton-Melville region has a sunny sky, an east wind at 18, gusting to 30 kilometers an hour. 30% is the relative humidity. The temperature is 11 degrees. Yesterday, Yorkton reached a high of 13 degrees and dropped to a low of -1 degree. There was no precipitation recorded in the 24-hour period ending at midnight last night. The normal high for this date is 16 degrees. The normal low is plus 3. The sun rose in Yorkton at 5:12 this morning, and it will set at 8:21 tonight. Extreme temperatures for Manitoba and Saskatchewan yesterday. The Manitoba hotspot was Melitta at 18 degrees. The cold spot, Grand Rapids, at minus 7 degrees. The Saskatchewan hotspot was Leader at 20 degrees. The cold spot was Key Lake, which got down to minus 11 degrees. And that's a look at your agriculture weather. Please stay tuned. GX on Agriculture will return in 2 minutes' time. Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. This year's Saskatchewan Agriculture Scholarship recipients were announced yesterday. Jesse Patzer from Swift Current area received $4,000 as the 2021 Grand Prize Scholarship winner. And he tells us about himself.
Yeah, I'm a grade 12 student at the Swift Current Comp. I participate in extracurricular sports like basketball and volleyball. I've grown up on the ranch and farm, and I've spent every minute I can out there helping my dad.
Tell me about your family farm.
So we established back in 1910, and we run 350 head of cattle. I think we farm around 780 acres of grain land.
What kind of cattle do you have?
Red Angus. And then we breed Charolais bulls to get big tan calves.
What do you like about those two breeds?
We find that the Charolais makes big calves, and then the Red Angus, they seem to be nice and easy to work with.
Now, what gave you your idea for the scholarship competition?
I heard on the radio, and my dad really urged me to apply and write that essay.
And what was your essay about?
Yeah, the essay was on transparency in agriculture and the importance of producers being transparent in everything they do. So I talked about how every producer needs to do their part to tell the consumer what the agriculture industry looks like and how it's safe and how they care about their livestock and they care about their land and crops and everything like that.
Do you think there's a lot of misinformation out there?
Yes, I do. There's so much, just false information that would get you to believe that agriculture is just ruining the world and we're horrible people.
And where do you see that kind of stuff?
Social media. And I see it a lot in my high school with the kids that I, like my peers, they talk about it a lot because they see it on their Instagram and Snapchat or whatever.
So you see yourself as an advocate for agriculture for your generation?
Yes, for sure. Giving them the truth of what agriculture really is.
Was it an easy subject to write about?
Yeah, I think so. I definitely had to think about my points a little bit and made me definitely realize the importance of everything. And
I understand you would be putting your scholarship to good use.
Yes, I'm planning going to U of S to go into the Bachelor of Science in Agriculture. And for sure, the essay writing will definitely help me out.
What are your long-term goals after completing your degree?
I'd like to part-time in agronomy and do some work on the side, and my goal is to come back to the ranch and the farm and eventually continue. I'm the fifth generation, so if I could continue that to a sixth, that'd be the dream.
What would you say to grade 11 students who might be thinking about applying for this scholarship next year?
Yeah, it's definitely a really good thing to do because, like I said, it opened my mind up to, the topic was transparency, so it really opened up my thoughts, my mind to the whole world is being transparent and showing the message. The extra bonus of having some money on the side to get you through school, that always helps. I recommend to anybody in grade 11, applies for as many scholarships as possible, and even have take some extra work and time, it's worth it.
And what are you doing right now?
Yeah, we're seeding canola right now. So I took the morning off of school and sat on the tractor.
That's Jesse Patzer. He goes to high school in Swift Current, but the family farm is just east of that city in the Waldeck area. He is this year's Saskatchewan Agriculture Scholarship recipient. He received $4,000 through the grand prize yesterday. It's now 12:28 in Saskatchewan, 1:28 in Manitoba, and it's time for the AgriView portion of our program. And that's a presentation of Peebles Machine and Welding in Yorkton.
GX94, AgriView.
New numbers today show declining stock levels for nearly every Canadian grain, oilseed, and pulse crop. Statistics Canada has released a report on stock levels to the end of March. Those lower stocks are the result of active export demand led by China. Total stocks of canola fell nearly 38% year over year to 6.6 million metric tons. That's the lowest level of canola stocks since 2013. On-farm stocks at the end of March were estimated at 4.8 million tons, down 47%. Commercial stocks were 1.8 million. StatsCan says canola exports reached a record 8 million metric tons, up 27% with strong sales to China and the European Union. Domestic crush took another 7.4 million metric tons, up 0.7%. Moving to wheat, stocks are estimated at 16.2 million metric tons, down 13.6% from 1 year ago. Wheat exports rose 29% to a record 17.8 million metric tons. That's a full 2.3 million tons more than the previous record set 2 years ago. Chinese wheat purchases nearly quadrupled. Barley stocks to the end of March were 2.8 million metric tons, down 20.5%. On-farm stocks fell by nearly 30% to 2.2 million tons. More than 90% of Canadian feed barley exports went to China. Oat stocks remained relatively steady at 1.8 million metric tons, and pea stocks were down 1.7% to 1.9 million metric tons, while lentils fell 14% to 1.4 million. Prices for feed grains are continuing to go up, and with depleted stocks and dry conditions forecast for the prairies, they're likely to rise a bit more. According to Prairie Ag Hotwire from Wednesday, high delivered bids for Alberta feed barley were at $7.58 per bushel, an increase of 61 cents from last month and $2.57 from last year. As for Alberta feed wheat, high delivered bids were at $9.25 per bushel, 68 cents higher than last month, and $2.59 higher than the year before. Adding to pressures on current feed grain stocks are international buyers purchasing new crop, ongoing drought, and a new 40,000 head feedlot north of Enchant, about 75 kilometers northeast of Lethbridge. Ocean freight rates have climbed steadily higher over the past year, recovering from the lows hit at the start of the pandemic in early 2020 to see their highest levels in over a decade. The Baltic Dry Index, a major indicator of shipping rates, hit a high of 3,266 points on Wednesday. That marked its strongest level since June of 2010 and compares with the multi-year lows just under 400 points hit at the same point a year ago. Strong worldwide shipments of coarse grains contributed to the recent strength in the Baltic Dry Index, according to a report from shipping association called the Baltic and International Maritime Council. Canada is at a freight disadvantage compared to its competitors into some markets, and higher freight rates can heighten that disadvantage. However, Canadian grain exports continue to move at a solid pace, with total bulk exports of the major grains and oilseeds through week 38 of the 2020-2021 crop year of 39.9 million metric tons, running 30% ahead of the previous year's pace, according to Canadian Grain Commission data. The semiconductor chip shortage plaguing automotive and equipment manufacturers may last into the second and even third quarters of the year, according to farm equipment retailer Service Group. Calgary-based Service, which operates 64 dealerships in Canada, Australia, and New Zealand, including 38 devoted mainly to deer farm equipment, expects increased demand to run up against supply chain constraints in its first quarter financial report on Thursday. While major automakers' difficulties in sourcing chips to complete new vehicles are well known, major farm equipment manufacturers, including Deere, CNH, and AGCO, have also taken a hit. While semiconductor makers have said they plan to boost production, chips are currently harder to come by as demand for consumer electronics such as smartphones and gaming systems is amped up by the COVID-19 pandemic. An AGCO official last month told Reuters the company is informing farmer customers they may have to wait as long as 6 months for their new machinery, putting delivery well past harvest in markets such as the United States. And that is the AgriView portion of our program. Please stay tuned. GX on Agriculture will return in 1 minute's time.
To the people tending the land and animals that feed us and support our community, we at Haas Nissan want to say thank you on behalf of all those who depend on you, the farmer. Like you, we're a family business with family values you can depend on. Haas Nissan, where a customer becomes family.
Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. I'm Doug Faulkner. It's sunny and 11 degrees in the Yorkton-Melville region. I'll have your complete weather details coming up at the top of the hour. The general manager of Manitoba Pork says legislation designed to protect landowners from trespassers will enhance the ability of livestock producers to guard their animals from the introduction of disease. Bill 62, the Animal Diseases Amendment Act, and Bill 63, the Petty Trespass Amendment and Occupiers Liability Act, introduced by the Manitoba government, will increase the protection of landowners from trespassers. Cam Dahl explains what the two acts entail.
The two acts, first on the Bill 62, which helps protect and enhance biosecurity for Manitoba producers, and it helps ensure that people can't just come onto your farm and breach your biosecurity zones, and that there would be penalties for doing that. And I think all of your listeners will understand that now after over a year of COVID and protecting human biosecurity. The same is true for pork and for chickens and turkeys and dairy cattle in Manitoba, that biosecurity is critically important to preserving the health of our animals. And the threat from foreign animal disease is real. African swine fever, for example, has resulted in well over 2 million hogs dying in China. And we don't want that here. So very much applaud the government of Manitoba's efforts to help producers in Manitoba protect the biosecurity of their farm. And the second bill on the Trespass Act also helps farmers protect their farm from people who trespass, and that no longer will they have to directly confront trespassers, and no longer will they have to prove that that permission was not granted to come onto the farm. So the two bills are really designed to help protect animals on the farm and protect farmers who are taking care of them. And they're both very good pieces of legislation. We applaud them.
There seems to be a lot of discussion surrounding these two bills when it comes to the environmental footprint of the pork sector and animal care. Why is that?
Well, I think we're seeing the discussion because there are some who argue that people should be able to go on to farms without an invitation to document what's happening on farms. If there is, for example, poor animal care or poor environmental handling. But what we know is that, in fact, the environmental footprint of agriculture is vastly improved from 50 years ago. If we think about, how old MacDonald farmed, well, he's retired, and we really should not invite him back to work. And And I'll just give you, you know, some examples from pork, where, you know, from 50 years ago, we're producing 35% less greenhouse gases. Pork today from your grocery shelf is produced using 40% less water and you know, a third less feed than it was 50 years ago. Manure is not treated like a waste. This is a valuable crop nutrient, and it's being applied in a way, injected below the soil, where it's not vulnerable to runoff and where it's readily available for plant use. So the environmental footprint of production in Manitoba has very significantly improved through research, economies of size, growth and development. Today's farmers are really doing a good job of being stewards of the land and the water. And the same applies to animal welfare. There are many different levels of assurances that you know, animals are being cared for properly. That's something that the industry and individual farmers take very seriously, because it's our public trust is at stake, both domestically and internationally. And so there's a combination of professional standards and regulations that help assure animal care. The starting point is the code of practice for the care and handling of pigs. That's put together by the National Farm Animal Care Council. It includes representation from farmers, but it also includes independent scientists. It also includes outside non-governmental organizations that are involved in animal welfare. It's open to the public to review when it's being put together. So this really is an independent scientific assessment of how pigs should be cared for. And that's the basis. And then we have the industry standards like the Pig Safe and Pig Care programs. And farmers actually can't deliver to a federally inspected plant unless they're registered in these industry programs. And requirements are there that animals are properly cared for. And it includes audits of their operation for environmental and animal care. And also has things like requirements for vet visits. And backing up the code of practice, the industry programs, is of course the regulations and legislation in Manitoba, and so there really is a solid foundation, a solid three-legged stool for assuring animal care. It is some of the best. It's a model that has been used in other jurisdictions. So, you know, I think it's something that Manitobans can be proud of. This is an industry that is a driver of the Manitoba economy. It creates jobs and is environmentally conscious and really does pay a great deal of attention to animal care.
When discussing these two bills, what does the public need to be aware of as this legislation moves forward?
I think the key points is the purposes of these two acts. It's to help protect animals and really based around that assuring of biosecurity and ensuring that outside people are not going to breach that biosecurity and bring in disease, whether it's from the next farm, whether it's something that was in the ditch, or whether it's a foreign animal disease. So the purpose is to protect animals, and the second, the petty trespass and occupiers is also to protect farmers. So it's to protect our farm families and the animals that they care for.
Cam Dahl is the General Manager of Manitoba Pork. It's coming up now on 12:44 in Saskatchewan, 1:44 in Manitoba.
Livestock market conditions.
June live cattle futures closed at 116.02 today. That's up 55. August live cattle closed at 118.85, up 37. August feeder cattle closed at 144.27, up 87. September feeder cattle closed at 146.05, up 50. June lean hogs closed at 112.85, down 162. July lean hogs closed at 113.55, down 110. And that's the livestock market conditions. Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. The Manitoba canola growers held a webinar last month concerning fighting flea beetles and establishing a strong plant stand. One of the guest speakers was Larry Durand. He operates an agronomic consulting business called Field Good Agronomics in Humboldt. He talks about how to approach flea beetle management.
What I have here is what I call the flea beetle management cycle, the way I kind of view it. There's decisions to be made pre-seeding, at seeding time, and also post-seeding. And so I'll kind of talk about all those in those fashions. But overall, when we're thinking about flea beetles, the objective is that we can avoid having to make a foliar insecticide application. So let's talk about pre-seeding. So at this time of year, and I'll even suggest that months ago, we should have been thinking about some of these items. But the first thing to do is a risk assessment. So what are important things to think about when you're assessing your risk for flea beetles? And it should be not just on a farm basis, but on a field by field basis. So we got to think about things like crop rotation, past flea beetle issues. I think everybody's had flea beetle issues in the past. So I don't know that that's a big issue, but also consider what flea beetle species that you've had problems with, and what weather conditions have been or what you think they might be like and how that might impact. And of these risk components, I would suggest that probably your crop rotation and the species of flea beetles you've been experiencing are probably the two most important factors when you're assessing how much risk you think you're going to have of flea beetles in any one particular field. So this is actually a bigger farmer client of mine. They farm about 20,000 acres, and they tend to grow a lot of canola. In fact, usually about 60% of their acres is canola. So of course, it's physically impossible to grow 60% canola without having some canola on canola. And if you look at these top two fields on the rotation, so the first field here, you know, you kind of have your canola, cereal, canola, cereal, canola rotation, which here around Humboldt is very, very typical. We're at more northern latitudes. So, you know, crops like soybeans and some other corn and things like that are tougher to grow successfully year after year. So, you know, canola tends to be every second year. But if you look at the second field here, they had some quinoa in 17, but after that it was canola, wheat, canola, and they're planting canola again this year. So it's going to be canola and canola. In fact, it's going to be three out of the last 4 years is going to be canola. So I would call this field definitely a high risk field. And even this field, I would probably call it the low to even moderate risk. So that's about, you know, what we should be doing at this time of year as far as risk assessment. And then we need to decide at this time of year, in fact, probably this decision should have been made a few months ago, what seed you're going to buy, and more importantly, what seed treatment. So you need to buy that seed variety / treatment combination to match the risk you have on some of these fields. And it's important to note that not all seed treatments are available on all varieties. And it's important to understand the differences between the different seed treatments, which ones do what. I think most of you out there probably have a pretty good handle, but you know, I'm gonna go through it here. And you know, this Helix, Vibrance, and Prosper Evergold, that's kind of your base treatments, good fungicide components. But I'm just going to talk about the insecticide components of these treatments. So, you know, these are the insecticide components. All of these products are really good on the cruciferous flea beetles. Here in Humboldt, we've got just about all striped flea beetles. In fact, I think if I'd ever find a cruciferous flea beetle, I would capture it and donate it to the museum. That's how rare they are here now. Like it's getting so. for me, I really want to establish how well these are going to perform against the striped flea beetles. But I've rated these poor. I'm probably being a little bit harsh. They do have activity on striped flea beetles, but if you're going to have a striped flea beetle problem, you know, they are going to fail. Then we get in kind of the next level here, the Fortensa Lumiderm, which do have the same active, but Lumiderm is at a higher rate. And I have seen Lumiderm, you know, do a fair job on striped flea beetles. But, you know, if you're going to have a real problem, you're still going to have an issue with Lumiderm trying to keep up with it. I would say for Fortensa Lumiderm, they are really a cutworm product as opposed to a flea beetle products. And, but, you know, when you're looking at what you're going to add to your Helix or your Prosper, if you're looking to get striped flea beetle activity, that's where you get your Fortensa Advanced. Again, it's the same as Fortensa, but they've added the sulfoxaflor, which is, for those of you who are familiar with Vesivio, instead of Vesivio now, I don't think you can get it by itself. It's that component has now been added with the Fortensa. So now you have a product here that you can get activity on both your cutworms and your striped flea beetles. New product by Bayer called Buteo Start, and it's purported to have very good activity on both the crucifer and striped flea beetle activity. I haven't seen this in the field yet, but I look forward to seeing it. So basically what you wanna do, you wanna think back to those fields that you've assigned as being a high risk field, and maybe where you're gonna purchase these extra treatments, maybe put those on those fields that are gonna have higher risk. So that's how you wanna sit down with your farmer clients, or if you're a farmer, you pay extra maybe on just some of the fields where you think you're going to have the higher risk. Seeding management from a flea beetle standpoint, basically what we're talking about here is cultural control strategies. And it's all about getting that crop up and growing quickly. Seeding date, of course, the earlier you seed, the slower it's going to take to come out of the ground. You know, you got that 3 or 4 weeks of effectiveness of these seed treatments. So if you can't get to that 3 to 4 leaves in those first 3 or 4 weeks, you're going to come and run into trouble. Seeding depth, seeding rate. On this note, I put a little note here, pre-seed. If you think you're going to be in a high risk, and so you think you want to increase your seeding rate by 0.5 pound or 1 pound per acre, you need to make that decision before you're in the field seeding, because you need to have that extra seed. So if you've got a half section of canola that you decide you want to increase your seeding rate, you need to have purchase that an extra 160 to 320 pounds of seed to accommodate for that decision. And then again, any practices that are conducive to quick crop emergence. So again, good phosphorus fertility management, good seed bed preparation, good seed to soil contact. Those are all really important to help manage that flea beetle. And then once again, we're moving now into post-seeding. Scout, scout, scout. This is a picture of my work boots. I don't know, you're thinking when you're looking at this, you're probably thinking one of two things. Is that, wow, Larry scouts a lot of fields? Or you're thinking that, wow, Larry's really cheap and too cheap to buy himself some new work boots. Truth is, it's probably a little bit from column A and a little bit from column B. But it's important once your crop is emerging and coming up, you gotta be out there lots to scout. And it's important to note with flea beetles, it's not usually going to be uniform across the field, as we've already heard. It's usually patchy. Sometimes and oftentimes it's worse on the field margins. So don't just pull up onto the approach, walk in about as far as you can spit and make an assessment there. That's not adequate. You might have, it might look a lot worse there. And then as you walk in, it might not be bad. And then all you need to do is control your field margins. Or maybe your margins will be fine and you'll have some other areas in the field that are bad. So you really got to check everywhere. And also you got to monitor over time. So, you know, when you start seeing issues, you know, it might not look that bad today, but in a few days it might be worse. So, you know, drop a pin on your phone or put flags if that works better for you. But to monitor those patches, go back every couple of days to check that. So your scouting should be, you know, spatial scouting and temporal scouting, and both those two are very important to keep on top of those flea beetle issues. and follow those established economic thresholds. You know, we know what, you know, that 25% defoliation. I just put page 613 of the Saskatchewan Guide to Crop Protection. There's pictures of percent defoliation. If you carry that book around with you, that's a good spot. I'm sure the Manitoba Guide and the Alberta Blue Book have similar pictures. Stem feeding, again, that's a different animal. When you're just trying to determine thresholds, you kind of got to go by experience. You got to go by feel if you're getting some stem feeding. But also, it's not just about the percent defoliation, the amount of damage. Consider, what's your canola doing? Is your canola growing really well, really aggressively? Is it getting close to that 3 or 4 leaf stage that it might outgrow it? And so give it a chance. Or on the flip side, you know, are you having some issues with emergence for whatever reason? Maybe you've come across some frost, maybe that's made you lose plants and slowed down the progress. And so then sometimes, just based on how your canola is doing, you might want to massage that economic threshold a little bit. And that comes with some experience and a lot of scouting and going out regularly to monitor how things are progressing. And if you can avoid spraying, we have a lot of friends out there. I'll encourage you to go to the Field Heroes website. Think beneficials before you spray. Lots of really good resources there about beneficial insects, whether they're pollinators or just insects that are predators of insect pests. And, you know, if you do have to spray, I know that manufacturers of these seed treatments will provide free product. Often it's 50% of your insecticide, your foliar insecticide, if you need to spray. I have known farmers and even agronomists who have taken that to mean that, then I could justify spraying at less than 25% defoliation because my chemical is cheaper. And do not look at it that way. We want to save our friends in the field, our field heroes. So make sure you're still following those thresholds. Finally, last resort, if you do have to do a foliar spray, spot spray, if it's feasible, if it is just in field margins or areas that are easy to delineate, do that. Water is your friend. You want to get coverage, so use at least 10 gallons of water. Avoid the heat of the day. And if you're going to have to go out to spray, check if there's any other insects out there as well. If cutworms were mentioned earlier. If you also have a cutworm problem and you don't realize it today when you go spray for flea beetles and you use a product like a Desis or Matador, for example, you're not going to get the cutworm activity. And then you go back in a week and realize you got cutworms, now you got to go spray something else. Now you're hitting two foliar fungicides and that just makes it doubly bad. So, yeah, make sure you're covering everything with one application if it comes to that.
That's Larry Durand. He operates Field Good Agronomics in Humboldt.
Commodities update.
Canola futures are still trading. They haven't closed yet today. July canola trading at $1,006.70 per metric ton. That's up $43.20. November canola trading at $748.50. That's down $13.10. Everything else has closed. July Minneapolis wheat closed at $7.97.50, up 7 cents. July Kansas City wheat closed at $7.36.75, up 10 cents. July Chicago wheat closed at $7.61.75, up 8.5 cents. July corn closed at $7.32.25. Up 13.5 cents. July soybeans closed at $15.89.75. That's up 20.25 cents. July oats closed at $4.14.5, down 4.25 cents. And that's the commodities update.
In from Adama. Always read and follow label directions.
Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. It's now 101 in Saskatchewan, 201 in Manitoba. And it's time to check the GX94 precision weather forecast for the Quill Lakes, Hudson Bay, Swan River, Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, and Yorkton, Melville, Roblin, Russell regions today. partly to mainly sunny, winds east-southeast increasing to 10 to 20, and a high of 14 degrees. For tonight, mainly clear, winds east-southeast at 15 to 25, and a low of minus 3. Tomorrow, partly to mainly sunny, winds east at 15 to 25, a high of 14. Sunday, sunny, winds southeast at 10 to 20, a high of 13. Monday, mainly sunny, a high of 18. Tuesday, mainly sunny, a high of 21. In the Paw, it's 8 degrees. Swan River and Dauphin are at 10. Brandon, 11. Show Lake Russell and Roblin, 9. Regina is at 14. Saskatoon, Indian Head, 13. Hudson Bay, Broadview, Mooseman, 11. Wynyard, Wadena, Kelvington, 12. The Yorkton-Melville region has a sunny sky, an east wind at 18, gusting to 30 kilometers an hour. 30% is the relative humidity. The temperature is 11 degrees. That's your agriculture weather, and that'll do it for GX on Agriculture for today. Be sure to tune in again on Monday at 12:15 Saskatchewan time for another edition of the program. It's time now for the news and sports headlines.
CJGX, a Harvard radio station serving Saskatchewan and Manitoba. We are GX94.